Irreverent Testimony, brought to you by Netroots Radio, the political podcast by and for millennial and Gen Xer types from a left-wing perspective. It is Friday, March 3rd, 2017, and I am exhausted and fighting my third or fourth week of the damn flu. Rachel still got a little bit of it, too.
Hi. I'm better than I was last week.
Yeah.
I'll still probably have, like, coughing fits, but can we just say, brought to you by everyone we know has had this fucking cold for weeks, and we just keep passing it around amongst everyone we know in different stages of strains of, oh, I'm better. Nope, I have what you had. Well, right. I thought I had what you had, but now I have the actual version of what you had. Oh, I got the version of that he had, that she had, that we had. So we're basically just a walking cesspool of virus in our little clan.
Same with everybody I know, kind of. Yeah.
No, literally everyone I know. Literally everyone.
So good thing this wasn't like bird flu or something more serious, or we'd all be dead.
Yeah, we would be. Yeah.
Yeah. So now's a good time to be, you know, anti-vaxxer and everything.
Yeah.
Anyway, so some stuff has happened in the past week since we talked to you last. CPAC wound up. We had an address to Congress by Mr. Trump. And the Russians are coming. The Russians are coming. That about sums it up, right?
Are we done?
Thank you, everybody. Good night. I hope you enjoyed this episode of Irreverent Testimony. Let's talk about the address to Congress, because, oh boy, was the Beltway punditry in a lather and so excited and genuflecting and with tears in their eyes crying to the heavens of how presidential Donald Trump looked in reciting a prepared speech without soiling himself
or
kicking over the podium or urinating on the front row of the Congress or whatever else I suppose he was expected to do to keep in character. Then, of course, he didn't write. Are you kidding me? He may not have even read it.
Well, it probably was in the earpiece because I don't think he can read.
No, it's only Hillary Clinton that uses the secret earpieces.
Uh-huh. That's to feed her questions, though. This is to feed him a speech because he can't read. I did not watch it for obvious reasons. I'm, you know, not that much of a masochist.
Well, full disclosure, I didn't watch it either. I read the transcript.
I didn't do that. So yeah. I read the highlights and lowlights. I read the literal, like, just suck the dick of this man because he didn't
piss
on everything. The exception of the Washington Post.
Yeah, but a lot of other reporters and pundits were just, Van Jones was just genuflecting at his feet because he said something about the widow of one of the people killed in his bogus Yemen raid, and he became president tonight, quote unquote, and Katie Turr was genuflecting, and of course, Chris Lizza, but, you know, we expect that from him. And they were just fawning, and oh my God, his speech was so wonderful, and he was so presidential, and this is finally looked like the president. And I'm thinking, what is the point of this? Because in 12 hours, he's going to say or do something stupid. And
well, the larger point for me was, okay, so you can still be like a Nazi, racist, fascist, homophobic, Islamophobic, xenophobe,
but yeah, because that was all in his speech.
If you say it nicer, though, everything's fine.
Yeah,
he didn't say anything from a policy perspective that was any different than the shit that we are fighting against. And
no.
I would like to remind everyone, I am not fighting against the stupidity of Donald Trump. I'm not fighting against his inability to construct complete sentences. I'm not fighting against his ability to give a speech without saying something horrific. That is not my fundamental problem with Donald Trump. My fundamental problem with Donald Trump are the policies that he's proposed, however vague they may be. The overarching policies that he has proposed are horrific, and he doubled down on every single one of them.
Absolutely.
During that speech. So just because he says it nice, if I tell you, you know, that... if I say I'm going to build a wall and kick out, I'm sorry, not even kick out, just round up every brown person and conversion therapy every gay kid and take bathroom privileges away from trans children, If I say it really nice, that doesn't mean that the outcome.
If you say
you,
it well prepared and.
And I don't piss on anybody correct. Or like knock over something or say like the N word. That doesn't mean that those policies aren't horrific and terrifying and every bit as horrible as they were when he was saying it in less prepared language.
So well, that's what stood out to me, right? Because in that speech, all the xenophobia and the immigrant bashing and, you know, all the racial hatred frenzy crap was all there. It was not absent.
Nope.
And then you really have to slow down and scratch your head when Katie Turr and Van Jones start saying what a wonderful speech it was.
This is the problem with the news media writ large. Not everyone, but, you know, I don't care if the man got pissed on or if he said a weird thing that didn't make sense. We get all bogged down in that shit. I give a shit about what he's actually going to do. And in case we forgot, this isn't stuff that Trump said, this is what I'm going to do, and then he hasn't made any action on it. This is stuff Trump said he was going to do, and then he has made, I don't even know, dozens of executive orders at this point. And he's doing them, and he's directing the cabinet members of his administration to enact these policies. So I'm less concerned with, I mean, it's concerning when he acts like a lunatic and he is the president in public on TV. It's concerning for a variety of reasons. But the thing that I'm actively fighting this administration on is not his antics. It is his policies. And that is the thing that the media almost entirely forgot to focus on, which is what did he say he was going to do and what has he done and what does that mean for our country, which is what they do for every other president that's ever existed, is break down what he said and what that means for a potential policy position.
Not this guy, though.
But this was just like, oh my God.
He sounded sort of like a president.
He almost sounded like a human being. It was amazing. Like, okay, cool. What did he say? What? Oh, I wasn't listening. I was just, his voice was so soothing. It's crazy. I mean, it really is.
Is part of it also the soft bigotry of low expectations?
Yes, but it is also just a failure of journalism in my opinion.
Yeah.
The exception of the Washington Post.
Well, I mean, we didn't even get 12 hours till another scandal erupted that his cabinet, particularly Jeff Sessions, has all kinds of gross, sticky, incestuous ties with Russia that go back to the campaign.
Let's just be fair when we talk about this and say Jeff Sessions, the attorney general, committed perjury.
Mm-hmm.
He lied under oath in his confirmation hearing. That's what we're talking about.
Right.
So let me break that down for a minute. Because okay. It is, if we want to be a fact-based show, which I do, it is more nuanced than that.
Okay, fair enough.
He was asked by Al Franken during the confirmation hearing whether or not he had any knowledge of...
Can I stop you a second?
Yeah.
I want to roll back to 1988 and talk about Senator Al Franken was questioning Donald Trump's cabinet member, who was a former judge who was too racist to be confirmed to the federal
Senator
bench.
So Senator Al Franken at that point was what, like on the cast of SNL?
He was Pat from SNL.
Mm-hmm.
And Donald
so
Trump
Pat
was
from
Donald
SNL.
Trump. Now, it's not fair to lump those two together because Al Franken has actually been a terrific senator.
Well, yeah, he's a serious person and he quit comedy when he decided to go into politics.
Right, he's an intelligent guy.
He's a great guy.
But still, it's kind of amazing that...
Yeah.
That's
the SNL writer is... interrogating Donald Trump.
Donald Trump's cabinet pick.
For Attorney General Jeff Sessions. He didn't make it out of the 80s without being called too racist.
Well, that's where we are.
So Al Franken was interrogating or questioning, I don't know.
Jeff Sessions. He wasn't Pat. He was Stuart Smalley, the I'm good enough, smart enough, and people like me guy.
Okay.
Sorry.
And asked him about some of the Russia connections, some of the like the hacking and were you aware of any of this? And he said, Jeff Sessions said, I was called a surrogate of the campaign from time to time. But I was not aware of any of those conversations, and I did not have any of those conversations.
Yeah, that's exactly what he said.
So, the Washington Post, again, great. This is the people who took down Nixon. Democracy dies in darkness.
Mm-hmm.
Came out with a terrific investigative journalism piece about how that was not true. Jeff Sessions, prior to the election, met with the Russian ambassador on two separate occasions. The context that I want to provide to the listeners is that he met with that person while also having been a member of the Armed Services Committee.
Right.
He met with 26 additional ambassadors from other countries during that time. So it's very possible that when Jeff Sessions was asked the question about Russia, he answered it the way that he did because he was saying, as a surrogate for the campaign, I never met with the Russians. It may not have occurred to him that he met with these people because he wasn't thinking of it in terms of the campaign. He was thinking, well, yes, in my role as person on the Armed Services Committee, I met with them, but certainly not during the campaign. I think that's an important note. I think that's something that, you know, the liberal media is not covering properly. And if we want to work with facts, which I think we need to, mm-hmm. we should point that out. Now, I have a couple of caveats, though. One is he was the only member of the Armed Services Committee to meet with the Russian ambassador through the entire year of 2016. The explanation for that the Washington Post provided was that, you know, relations had cooled with Russia and there was just not a lot of reason to meet with the ambassador. That was sort of intentional for most members not to.
To give him the cold shoulder.
Yeah. Number two, I get the idea that it didn't occur to him that those meetings would have been relevant to that campaign or that confirmation hearing. Hear me out. However, that is not true that he didn't meet with anyone, number one. And number two, I think that the idea that he did and he went to the, I don't recall what those conversations entailed, is bullshit and is suspect. And while I think he should resign because he is a garbage person and has no place being the Attorney General of this country, considering his history, I do agree that he should at very least recuse himself from any investigation into Trump and Russia and the elections and anything that has to do with any of that. And he has agreed to do so. And that was all very like kind of domino effect within a matter of about 12 hours. It came out that he lied. He stood up for himself and said that I didn't meet with him as a campaign surrogate. I met with him as a member of the Armed Services Committee. A lot of Democrats called for him to resign. And then a lot of Republicans under a lot of fire from their constituents and from larger forces, I think, said maybe resigning isn't necessarily appropriate, but certainly recusal. And he initially said, fuck no, I'm not going to do that.
Except Cory Gardner.
And except our lovely Senator Cory Gardner, who we'll get to later. About 6 hours into the story during the business day, he recused himself from any investigation involving the Department of Justice into Putin's, Russia's, it's all the same thing, but, you know, into Russia's tampering with the election, hacking the election, Trump administration officials or transition team officials, meeting with Russians, anything having to do with Russia.
Yeah.
Jeff Sessions has recused himself from.
I do want to step in for a second because the Barry lead in all that was up until that moment, you had Ranch Priebus and Trump and Sean Spicer basically saying, what investigation? There's nothing to investigate.
No.
In fact, there's not even an investigation happening.
Yeah.
In fact, the FBI talked to me and said, really, there's nothing even here to investigate.
Right.
So that buried in that lead is Jeff Sessions saying, well, I'm going to recuse myself from this very important investigation.
That is not happening.
Now we've pretty much acknowledged it is.
It
haven't
is.
We?
Now, we already acknowledged under Obama that it was happening he launched the investigation.
Well, that's the investigation of the Russian tampering into the election, right, generally, not necessarily right. the Trump's possible
transition team and or campaign
being involved in that possibly.
Correct. Right.
In some fashion.
Right.
I want to also back up and make a larger point, right? People have very short memories. But let's go back a couple years when Putin invaded Crimea.
Yes.
And Putin and Russia were not really held in high regard in any American circles.
No.
But especially conservative circles.
Well, that's not
hold
true.
On, hold on, hold on. Because it was used as a cudgel to say, look at how weak Obama's foreign policy is. Mm-hmm. We've let this bully and this dictator, Putin, spread his Russian influence, and that's very dangerous to our interests, and this is so bad. And you had McCain going as Hold far on. As talking about troops. And
well, that's true, but there was also this section of the way right-wing Freedom Caucus, whatever, who since, I don't know, 2010 maybe, started screaming and yelling about how Putin's a strong leader and Putin, you know,
for all his anti-gay stuff.
Well, yes. And the fact that he is, you know, shirtless on a, on horse. A horse. And, you know, he just seems like a strong leader. And
there
Obama,
was some of that.
There was
that.
A lot of it. Not from a large portion
yes.
of the Congress, but it was very loud. But, and there's a lot of it.
Sure.
That's why Trump, that is why, like, that stuff that was happening in 2010, 12, and 14 with these sycophants being like, we want to be strong like him. Basically, they were saying we want a dictator because look how strong he is because he doesn't have to kowtow to people.
Sort of.
Hold on. They said he's a strong leader. He doesn't respect Obama. We should have someone more like Putin. And Trump watches a lot of Fox News.
Sure, I remember that.
He was like, oh, I should love Putin too.
No, it goes back further than that.
Probably. But I think he's also piggybacking off of some of that support that he saw from the fringes of his party to say, you know, whatever his history is with Putin,
yes.
there is a public media message out there somewhere that I can latch onto that says Putin's not a bad guy. Putin's a strong leader.
Well, hold
Obama's
on.
Weak.
Hold on, hold on. Even in the midst of the Freedom Caucus and some elements of the right saying Putin's a strong leader and Obama's weak, it was still under the paradigm of, look, we can't let this influence spread, and that's against our national interest.
No.
That's how I remember it.
There was no nuance with these people. People that loved him naked on horseback, just like pissing all over everybody, they're the people that didn't comment, I don't think at all, on his human rights record or anything else. They were just like, see, he's weak and he doesn't respect Obama and he's strong. And it was a little more nuanced a message than that, but not much. And that's the message that I think Trump, combined with all of his God knows what dealings over there, latched onto and said, okay, well, there are people that believe that Putin is a strong leader. I would say my dad is a person who has said to me, like, yeah, Putin might be a bad guy, but at least he's respected.
What does that even mean?
It means that, I don't know, Obama's not respected in the world, which is
he was way more respected,
facially untrue,
than Donald Trump.
Not respected by the people my dad listens to on talk radio.
Right, exactly.
I mean,
and Fox News.
You know, it doesn't mean anything, but it is a definite thing that goes around these circles of, like, that's a talking point, and it's a believed fact among the sort of right wing, Obama haters.
I'm going to disagree with you slightly in that my most recent recollections, especially with the invasion of Crimea, was all Russia influence spreading, Russia bad, we haven't done enough to curb Russia. And now, because Trump is in bed with the Russians, the conservative, the Republican stances, well, maybe we should have better relations with Russia, and that's not so bad. Except for holdouts like McCain and Lindsey Graham and a couple others. But for the most part, they've turned a blind eye, and all the stuff they pretended to care about before with the spread of Russian influence, they don't, because they're in the corner of their party, or at least their party's leader. That's kind of where I think we are.
I mean, I don't know.
No, some of that, I think you're right. And then, like, you go on Twitter and you see, you know, deplorable Marge with the bald eagle avatar.
But this
saying,
is way
see,
back.
Putin's a strong guy.
This is way before Trump. This is Stephen Colbert making fun of this. This goes way back. There's been this odd... and I have a theory, and it's not a theory that I've made up. It's one that, like, is pretty well backed. A lot of the people that like Putin in the United States like him because of his ties to the Orthodox Church in Russia. And this is a new thing for Putin. He did this. He sort of started this connecting himself with this Orthodox, I think it's Greek Orthodox, right? But like the super hardcore Orthodox Christian Greek Orthodox,
right, which
people.
Is goofy in itself because he's a former KGB guy.
Well, that's because it's totally inauthentic.
Of course.
He did it because they have a lot of power. And he thought he could consolidate power by getting them on his side, as well as if he could do that, if he could use their power, but also use their kind of social controls, that he'd have a lot more power in Russia. And so a lot of the LGBT stuff that you see, a lot of the women's rights stuff in particular, things like men are allowed to beat their wives, men are allowed to beat mm-hmm. their girlfriends. That is no longer a crime in Russia. LGBT people can be regularly abused, beaten, murdered, raped, and no law enforcement official comes to their aid. In addition to the fact that you can be jailed for it, there's a lot of the stuff that he sort of wanted to do just to have social control of the public that he was able to do under the guise of religion very cleverly by aligning himself with the Greek Orthodox Church. And so if you look at like the Pussy Riot case, the way that they were able to be jailed was because they, not just because they were protesting, because that's kind of illegal, but mostly like that's like the secret government people come get you. The way that they were able to so publicly be prosecuted and jailed was because at one point they did a protest at a church service. They didn't break into the church. They didn't vandalize the church. They didn't hurt anyone. They just simply came into the church as non-members. Not that you have to be, but I guess they obviously weren't, and started playing this punk rock song in the church during a service. And that is illegal in Russia because the church is a sacred place. Now, that would obviously not be the case under any other Russian regime ever. But when Putin allied himself with the Greek Orthodox Church, he's allowed them to make a lot of social policies because it helps his social engineering in terms of how he can control the people, how he can control the media and the propaganda and that kind of stuff. So what they were really tried for was like basically disrespecting a sacred place, mm-hmm. Which is illegal since he basically gave the Greek Orthodox Church, like, here you go, here's all the power, go ahead. So I think that's a really interesting part of Putin's rise to power and his inauthenticity. On no planet do I believe that he believes anything that this church believes. I don't think he even believes in God. I don't think that he's a religious person. I don't think that he's pious in any way. I think that he used this existing power structure to consolidate even more social power.
Oh, of course.
So that he could have more control.
Of course. Much in the same way Trump did, reaching out to Jerry Falwell and evangelicals and
right, except for in our country you don't get to make laws that allow for one religion to penalize or criminalize things that go against their faith, and I don't mean that in the way of like, oh, we want to make abortion illegal because of XYZ. Like, that's sort of the soft end of what Putin did. What Putin did was say, like, literally, what do you believe? Okay, we'll make it law. And the funny thing is, these people that are so like, oh, it's fine, like, Putin's a strong leader and morals, are also like Sharia law is going to be the end of the world. It's the end of American right. civilization. It's the end of everything ever. But Putin and his what he's doing is good because it's Christian. And, you know, I mean, I don't want to get on a whole thing, but like separation of church and state. Important, and we're not a Christian nation. And if you want to make American Sharia law, and then you call yourself like a defender of the Constitution, then that's pretty funny.
Well, you have a lot of people in Congress who want to have this be a Christian nation, much in the way Iran is an Islamic state.
Mm-hmm. Not a lot, but yeah, some.
More than you'd think.
I agree. I was having this fight with my friend today, Dawn, at work. Because, you know, she and I will never... She said to me... Rachel, she asked me these questions. Like, she does all this internet research, and then she'll just pop over my cube and be like, what is feminism? Which we can get into later. But she said to me today, what does reproductive justice mean? And I said, well... You're going to hate it, but it means the right for women to have, for people really, to have choice over their bodies and their reproductive health. I said certainly a large component of it has to do with abortion and freedom of choice. The other part of it would be freedom for birth control. And comprehensive sex education and STI screenings and everything that has to do with reproductive health and sexual health. And she started talking and then she stopped herself and she said, you know, you and I have had this conversation before and I don't think, she's like, I think you know where I stand and I think you know where, I know where you stand. And like, it's so funny because she has no idea where I stand, how far to the other side I am.
Right.
And I said, yeah, I don't even think we're sitting at the same table, so I don't think we should have this conversation. And she said, well, that's not true. She said, you agree with me that people shouldn't use abortion as birth control.
Yeah, nobody does.
Well, it's not true. I mean, if you failed to use birth control and you got pregnant and you don't want to have a kid, I completely stand for your right to have an abortion.
Right.
Also... What I like to point out is when you go have that abortion, the very first thing they do is prescribe you some kind of birth control.
Right.
I mean, you can choose not to take it, but they ask you what your preferred method is. Would you like an IUD? Would you like to take something over the counter or orally? Would you like to look into a million other options? Or we can provide you with condoms, but they definitely push birth control. Number two, women don't do that. Number three, I don't give a shit why you want to have an abortion. You should get to have one. But number four, which is the part where I was really coming down hard on her, was then we should allow access to birth control that isn't abortion, don't you think?
Right.
And also education around that. And she said, she didn't say anything for a while. And then this is her method. She thinks about it and she thinks about it. And she comes back and she's like, I need an honest answer to this question. I said, okay. She said, what stops people from using birth control?
Lots.
And I said, well, that's a really good question. And there's a lot of reasons. There's a lot of things. Sometimes it's access. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's education, knowing what's available, knowing what even it is, knowing how to use it properly, knowing right. How to use it at all.
Right. Money.
Money. Transportation, again, access. There's a lot of factors that go into people not having access to birth control. I said, not least among them, some of your compatriots who would rip this IUD out of my body if they could. She was like, what are you talking about? And I said, so if you don't want people to use abortion as a birth control method, and I don't want them to either, because that would be horrible. For everyone involved, I think that you should maybe talk to some of these senators who share your Christian Judeo values and say, you know, access to birth control is a right that everyone has. And I said, you know, you look at your Rick Santorums and your Mike Huckabees, and she loves Mike Pence. I was like, and you're Mike Pence's, and they would like to take away my right to have birth control. And she was like, not true. And I was like, very true. Because for them, and just hear me out, and these are all Catholic men. Well, not Mike Huckabee, but, you know, Pence and Santorum. Those are the big anti-birth control guys. I said, for them, basically, I should just, if I don't want to have a kid, I should just not have sex. Right. Even if I'm married, especially if I'm married, it doesn't matter. As a woman, I have no right to sex unless I would like to have a child every time I do so.
Right.
And she was like, well, those are the Catholics. And I said, yeah, and they're the leaders of the conservative movement that is the non-Trump people, and they would rip this IED out of my body if they had the chance. And she was like, I don't know about that. So I sent her like four articles.
Mm-hmm. Where they call IEDs abortifacients.
Well, it's not just that. Yeah. It's way more nefarious than that. Like, yes, the IED, of course, they would rip out of my body in a moment's notice. But also just the idea that like people shouldn't really have access to birth control because if don't have sex if you don't want to have a kid.
Right.
The Rick Santorum model. And Mike Pence. And they would very much like to roll back Griswold v. Connecticut and make birth control illegal. And she pored over those for a while, and then she was like, well, I think that's bullshit. You can't
seems
be against
to be a recurring
she's
pattern
like,
with
you can't
her.
Be against abortion and be against birth control.
Well,
and I said,
welcome
you can
to the
be,
Republican Party.
You can be if you hate the fact that women have sexual agency.
Yes.
And she said, I don't know what that means. And I was like, if you hate the idea that women sometimes have sex for pleasure and not to get pregnant, and that should be their right, and when they do that, they get to decide if they have a kid or not. Whether that's before they get pregnant or after, I think women have agency in terms of they have control over their own identity. If you don't want women to have abortions, then you should be the biggest proponent of birth control and a free IUDs and everything that exists.
Sex education,
not just no abstinence because it doesn't work, you know, comprehensive sex education. If you hate abortion, that's the best way to stop it.
Of course, common sense.
And she was like, well, I agree. And I can't imagine, I can't believe that these men are saying that you shouldn't be able to have birth control. And I'm like,
well, thanks for tuning in.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's a recurring pattern with this friend of yours that every time you enlighten her to something, she says, well, that's just ridiculous.
Yes.
The people that I admire and always vote for and listen to and hang
she
on.
She voted for Obama twice.
Yeah.
Because she didn't like Sarah Palin and she didn't like John McCain. She liked John McCain, but she really didn't like
Sarah
Palin.
Why didn't she like Sarah Palin?
Because she's an idiot who doesn't know anything.
As opposed to Trump?
What she told me was she voted for Obama because she felt that looking at the two candidates, he was the most authentic and he cared the most about the American people.
Okay.
And when she compared him to Mitt Romney, it was no question because Mitt Romney seemed like a fake asshole who didn't give a shit about anybody.
Right.
And Obama still seemed like the person who cared the most about the American people and would do the best he could do. She's like, I understand people are fallible. He might not do the best thing every time, but he's going to do the best thing for us that he thinks there is to do.
And so somehow comparing Hillary Clinton to Donald Trump, she came to the opposite
absolutely. Conclusion. Now, she is a Hillary hater of, she believes that Hillary Clinton has murdered up to 20 people. Okay. She's completely corrupt. She lies every sentence, she's completely drank the Kool-Aid on the Hillary Clinton thing since
she's the not 90s. The only one.
So that was a non-starter for her. She said she told me like if it would have been almost any other Democrat, she probably would have voted for that person. But having it be Hillary for her was worse than Trump because she literally drank every ounce of Kool-Aid plus all the, you know, cyanide Kool-Aid by the Jim Jones people, conspiracy theorists, plus like I just made myself a couple cups. Hillary for her is a non-starter in the same way that like when we talk about choice, she is like, how is it that you believe women have the right to kill people, but no one else has the right to kill people?
Okay.
So we don't talk about that because we're like, oh, it's too far apart.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, yeah, so it does seem that way. And you know, there's a lot of things like, there's conversations that we have that are, for example, we were talking, she gets She's singularly obsessed with ISIS. For her, the greatest threat to the world is ISIS, and everything else should stop. And she doesn't understand the difference exactly, I don't think, between like refugees, because she reads news stories and then she like sometimes throws them at me like, see, this is what I was saying. And she was saying the other day, she's like, I just read a report and it was from the UN. Like, because she's learned that, like, I won't listen to her fake news bullshit. She has to, like, cite her source before she talks to me. And she's like, the UN just came out and said, in Syria, both sides that are fighting have committed war crimes.
Right.
And I was like, I know. And she was like, both sides. And I said, yes, both sides have committed horrific war crimes. One of them is ISIS. The other side is the Syrian regime.
Well, actually, she was probably talking about the Assad regime and the rebels.
Well, that's what I mean. The rebels. Well, right. Okay, right. And then there's also ISIS. But I said, the thing that's so upsetting for me is all these people that are in the middle. And she looked at me like I had four eyes and then just started reading again. Because for her, what that meant was both sides was the refugees and ISIS. Yeah. And I'm like, no, it's like the rebels and the regime, and then there's
and
ISIS.
The refugees
that they're all
are literally people like you and me.
The refugees are people like you and me that
killed.
Are just trying to not get killed by these people committing war crimes. The people they're committing war crimes against are the people who are trying to flee to our country, who you think should be knocked out of any consideration.
Right.
And that just like made her head explode, and I didn't hear another thing about refugees for the rest of. Really, this was like Tuesday. Monday. So I haven't heard anything about refugees for the week. Like, that was like, oh no, the refugees aren't the other side. The refugees are not committing war crimes. What's my argument? And you're like, yeah.
There is none.
I was like, the people in the middle, those are the refugees. I feel really bad for them.
Right.
Everyone around them is committing war crimes. And she was like, wait, oh. Boom. So I haven't heard anything about that. She has to think about it, I guess. Yeah, so that's my good work and my inside bit for the inside the Republican mind of not she's not a Republican, she's a
something.
She's my friend that I talk to that doesn't agree with me. Oh, the other I have one more story from her.
Okay.
She asked me, I work with this what we call a baby lawyer because she's been a lawyer since October of 2016.
Oh, she's not a lawyer for babies who like get charged with embezzlement? Or?
Yeah, no.
Okay.
Very accomplished, very brilliant woman. Younger than me even. And got
that
hired.
Young.
I mean, she's a lawyer and she's like a baby. Anyway, brilliant, hardworking, lovely, and like just super sweet to us. Anyway, Don was asking me she said, can you tell me what defines a feminist? And I said, okay, yes. I said, because I know that she has some idea what that means, so she's fishing, right? So I said, I believe in the full social, economic, legal, you know, all the things. Equality between all gender identities. Specifically, we usually talk about between men and women, but for me, I talk about it amongst all people. If you want to talk about the traditional definition of feminism, we say between men and women, but let's be a little bit more inclusive. And she was like, I don't know what all that means. And I said, just the basic tenet that men and women are equal, but not just that you feel that way, but that they are actually treated within the structure of our system equally, that men and women or people of all gender identities are treated economically, socially, politically equal, that there should be no difference. And she was like, okay, don't you believe that whoever is the best for a job should get hired? and not depending on if they're a man or a woman, or if they're black or they're white. And I said, well, that's talking about affirmative action, which is completely tied to feminism if you want to do intersectional feminism. And so, no, I don't think that's true, but like, let's not get off the rails, because if I start getting crazy liberal on her ass, like crazy political theory, like
you'll just lose her.
I'll lose her completely. So I was like, let's get back to feminism. She's like, why do you think women are not equal to men? And I said, well, you walk around in the world every day as a woman. Do you think that you're equal to men? Not you, but women generally, right? Because don't be anecdotal. Like, don't. I do better than my husband. I make more money than this person. Right. I have more opportunity than, like, it's not anecdotal. Just women generally, statistically, and men generally, statistically. Are they doing the same 50-50s here? And she was like, obviously not. Men don't have babies.
Okay.
So women don't have babies in a vacuum, right?
No, not usually.
Not generally. Most babies that are born, and by most I mean 90%, are born of a heterosexual couple, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
Considering that gay people make up between 5-7% of the population. And then, of course, there are women who have babies by themselves through in vitro or sperm donation. But let's assume we're talking about the majority of people who are in the workforce who have kids. Because we're talking at Don's level, right? So nobody email me. Don't fucking email me about how blah, 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 your story. Blech. You know what I mean. I'm trying to talk to somebody who thinks like this. So I said, women don't have babies in a vacuum. And she said, no. And I said, so women should be punished for having to carry the, not only do they have to carry the child, birth the child, nurse the child, and go back to work, but they also get punished by being paid less and getting less promotions. I mean, you know, the man had exactly as much to do with creating that child as the woman, right?
Right.
And she's like, but God's purpose is for women to bear children. Okay. So we're off the rails there. We're not going to see eye to eye that. Oh, all right. I said, that's fine, but the law shouldn't see men and women as different. And she's like, obviously. So I said, so you, like, I was trying to explain, like, structural oppression, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's not about, like, you're doing okay, therefore women are doing okay. She started talking about, like, right. It's more about how you raise somebody. She's like, if a girl is born and she is raised by, like, you know, a mom and a dad, a couple, like a mom and a dad couple, and they're like conservatives and Christians, and they raise their kid, like, and they raise her to be tough. Cause, like, let's say the dad's in the military and let's say the mom is like tough as nails. And I'm like, this is getting really specific, but okay. And she's like, that girl's going to be fine. And I said, here's what I want to say. That girl who's raised by the really specific military dad, tough as nails mom, who were conservative Christians from the South, could, let's say we have that girl, and then we have another girl who's raised by like hippie parents in a commune, and then we have a girl raised by a single mom, and then we have a girl who was orphaned at 6, mm-hmm. and then we have a girl who was raised in Venezuela who moved here when she was 30, right? I agree that the parenting style and the environment in which that child grew up is going to frame how that child views the world and how that child is able to steel themselves against the world. What I'm saying is, regardless of how that child was raised, when she walks into the world, nobody gives a shit, because what is she? A woman.
Mm-hmm.
That conservative raised, hippie raised, Venezuelan raised, single mother raised, orphan raised, when that woman walks down the street or walks in the world or applies for a job or a house or walks down a dark alley, nobody knows how their parents raised them.
Right.
They're going to walk in the world as a woman.
Right.
And they're going to be treated in the world as a woman, regardless of how they were raised.
Right.
And my objection is not that they're some, you know, whiny, liberal, hippie-raised person. It's that every one of those women are going to be treated as women in the world. And the way that women are treated in the world isn't very good. Right. And I would like to change the way women are treated in the world. I like to think that we should all raise women in the world, if we can, to believe that they have value and worth, and that if people cut them down, they shouldn't take it to heart and all of that. That's just steeling themselves against what's going to happen to them. Mm-hmm. The world is still going to treat every single one of those women from every other background and every possible scenario you can imagine as women. And that structural oppression is what I'm trying to fight.
Okay. And on that note, we are going to take a quick break. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Testimony. So the topic du jour is, of course, Trump, Russia, Russia and Trump, all the Russia ties. How deep do they go? Was Jeff Sessions involved? We know about Michael Flynn. He's gone. And then you got Carter Page and Paul Manafort and Roger Stone. None of them are effectively with the Trump team anymore. They were, of course, with the Trump campaign.
Yes.
And I don't know. I don't know what happens here. I don't know where we go. I don't know how much will actually be revealed. I think that we can't rely on Congress to do literally anything.
Right. So here's a question I'm going to pose to you that I posed to my father and my friend.
Okay.
If the Democrats had been the people investigating Hillary Clinton over Benghazi. Mm-hmm. No matter what the outcome of that investigation, do you think people would have been satisfied? What is your answer, Travis?
If who had investigated Benghazi?
Democrats.
If Democrats had investigated Benghazi.
If Democrats were in charge of that hearing, the way that Republicans were, Chaffetz and all of that, right? If it had been Nancy Pelosi instead of Jason Chaffetz. Even if it had been as robust an investigation, do you think that anyone would have been satisfied with the outcome of that investigation should it have been Democrats rather than Republicans investigating Hillary Clinton?
The Republicans certainly wouldn't have been.
That's right, right?
Yeah.
So, they agreed. No, fuck no. You can't have the Democrats investigating Hillary Clinton. That would have been outrageous. They would have gone on her side and they would have not investigated fully and da 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 da, right?
Okay.
And I said, okay, so put yourself in my shoes. The reason we want a special investigator is because the Republicans are investigating the Trump shit. It's the same thing. Now, of course, it's not the same thing, but the optics are the same.
Okay.
So I said, so if you would not have been satisfied with the Democrats holding hearings and investigating Hillary Clinton to the full extent of their ability, why do you think that I am not okay with the Republicans doing the same? And my friend from work said, that's a fair point. Although I do think Jason Chaffetz is an honorable man and I believe him. And I said, okay, that's fine. I don't. And if you want to not hear about this for the next 4 years, it's the same thing. You need to appoint somebody, either a bipartisan commission so that it's both parties investigating with equal power, or someone who's a completely third party who can investigate this, because the same way that you would have been upset about the Democrats investigating Hillary, I am not satisfied with the idea of the Republican Congress investigating the Republican president. So then she was like, well, but you can't trust people and da da da. And I was like, look, I just kept saying over and over, if there's nothing to hide, why doesn't he want an investigation?
Right.
Well, because it would look really bad and da da da. I'm like, well, he doesn't care what things look like. He doesn't give a shit. He doesn't care with the optics of anything. He says crazy shit on Twitter all the time. He doesn't care about that. If there's nothing for him to hide, then I think he, and I told her, like, he should call for a full independent investigation. Just if I were working on Trump's team, having worked some in politics, I would say if I were on his team, assuming no wrongdoing had been done, which is what we're assuming when I'm talking to her.
Right.
You demand a full independent investigation, because at this point, the Russia ties are so robust and so sort of like ingrained in his campaign and in his administration, mm-hmm. that the only smart thing to do politically is to say, I want a full independent investigation of everything having to do with Russia. And she said, but you know what? He doesn't want to do that. And I said, no, why? She's like, well, he doesn't trust anybody. He doesn't want leaks.
Leaks of what?
And I, well, good question. I didn't ask that, which is what I should have asked. And I said, but if there's nothing for him to hide, if he's really innocent of all of this and he has no ties to Russia and all the things that people are saying are just crazy conspiracy theories, then let's do the most robust investigation that we can do and find out the truth, and he'll be fine. Right? And she was like, yeah. I mean, I said, I'm not looking for a witch hunt. I don't want the Democrats to investigate Trump like the Republicans did Hillary. That was unfair. I want an independent investigation of what happened. I just want to know what it was. That's all. I just want to know what happened. I don't need anything to come out pro or con anyone. I just want to know what happened. And she was like, well, but, you know, it's just very complicated. I'm like, no, it's not. It's not, though. It's not, though. It is politically messy if he says, look into my administration, and if there are people in it that did some wrongdoing, find out. But isn't that what you guys voted for, drain the swamp? Mm-hmm. Isn't that what you voted for? And she said, yeah, you're right. Drain the swamp. You're right. And you know what? If he's corrupt too, then get rid of him. Because I don't believe Mike Pence is a corrupt man. She always falls back on the Mike Pence thing because she loves him. Uh-huh. But she was very like, you know what? You're right. Like, if there's nothing to hide, why not have an investigation? Because
why do you have to twist her arm for her to get there, though? Why doesn't her own intelligence and logic lead her to that?
Because she voted for this man.
Okay.
It's hard. Okay. It's hard to admit that your guy is a bad guy, or that he hired bad guys, or that there's some stuff going on you didn't want. Because this was supposed to be drain the swamp. She said that to me multiple times. Like, she's been upset about a lot of things, and when she gets upset about them, she's like, "This isn't what he said. This isn't what he promised. Like, let's drain the swamp." And she'll go back and be like, "Look, I believe in what we voted on, not what he's doing. So if that doesn't line up, then like fuck him, basically." So look, she and I will fight the issues. We aren't there, because I'm not fighting the issues with anybody right now. I'm fighting to save the Republic.
Right.
And she's kind of right there with me. So in this fight of just saving the actual Republic, we're on the same side. If it came down to, let's say, you know, Hillary were elected, I think that we would probably not be friends, because she would hate everything and wouldn't be able to see reason at all.
Conspiracy,
you know,
theories everywhere, and the Republicans would be launching all 20, sorts of investigations.
She killed 20 people, and you know,
you know, and the Republican Congress, if it was a Republican Congress,
yeah,
both controls of both chambers, would literally be investigating Vince Foster and investigating this and investigating that and the
she
Clinton Foundation
20 people.
And Saudis and yeah. Chinese yeah. and whatever you ever once heard on Alex Jones or in an email the Republicans would be investigating. Some of them still want to investigate the Clinton Foundation.
Yes.
So
yeah. I heard somebody say, please, Hillary, just say that you're behind the Russia hacks so that somebody that will investigate them.
Sure, but they'll investigate her and none of Trump's team.
Yeah. So anyway, I don't know anymore. I have no idea. Obviously, I have no inside information about anything. But the optics of Trump and Russia, to me, as a person who has worked in politics, just from a outside optics perspective, to me, it seems very obvious that if it is true that Trump isn't being blackmailed by Russia or has some crazy business dealings or debt or whatever it is that people have speculated that he has. If he's being honest and all of that's true, or even part of it's true, even most of it's true, to me, as a person in politics, I would urge him with the strongest possible language I could use to encourage a special investigation into his own administration's ties to Russia and to root out any person who may or may not have had ties or knowledge of hacking and or contact with them during the campaign or after the campaign or before the inauguration or anything that would be illegal with Russia. I feel like as a Republican would be something that as just as a person who likes optics, I would tell the president, this is something that we have to do. We have to insist immediately that this be investigated, insist it publicly, say it out loud. Even if you sort of water down the committee or whatever, just saying out loud, obviously there's something here, and I'm not sure what it is. I think the problem with that is that a lot of maybe some of this stuff is true, and he doesn't want to do any of that because he's lying and because, of course, a lot of or some of or part of the stuff that people are saying might be true. And so he wants to keep that as far away from everyone as possible.
Here's my problem and here's my concern with Trump and Russia and whatever we might find or not find. Let's go back to Woodward and Bernstein and Watergate, right?
Yeah.
So this was not one story in the posts.
Right.
This was a series of stories.
This was investigative journalism.
With dogged investigation mm-hmm. over a period of, I think it was months.
I think it was years.
I think it was months.
Okay.
But it was a while. And
I mean, since they first picked up the story to when he resigned, I think is a matter of at least a year. Maybe.
Well, I'm talking
longer.
About the series of stories they published in the Post.
Oh, sure. Okay.
That sort of let the whole ball of wax
yeah.
down the road.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm not paying the best attention or I'm not following, but I just don't think it's sort of set up that way. I feel like everything with Trump and Russia are these series of quick hitters. And this thing that happened is interesting and troubling, and where does it lead? And then there's no follow-up. And then it's another story that maybe is somewhat related, but not really related, and it's not even the same authors. And maybe it's the way that newsrooms are set up, and maybe it's the way it's run, and maybe it's the fact that you need to get clicks.
Or maybe it's the fact that just people read journalism differently because of the way that digital media is set up. But
do you get that feeling too that any one of these leads, I feel like, if you doggedly follow them up, and maybe it's just the case that despite all the leaks, people just aren't willing to talk as much as they did for the committee to elect the president under Nixon, that all those people that talked to Woodward and Bernstein, where they were able to suss out all this information.
Well, and they had deep throat. So that was the big.
Yeah, we need another deep throat.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people are. I think we live in an age where deep throat's not necessary because we have. Well, I think he is, but I think that. This is not a fully formed thought, but I think that in the age of social media and in the age of leakers who can not have to go to an underground parking garage and whisper something to a man that they don't know.
They can email it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Through like an anonymous, you know, server. And, you know, I think that things get quicker.
Things are also harder to vet.
Less vettable, less verifiable, less knowable. And so we are in an information age where we know a lot more about what's going on in the White House because I think people that are inside the White House, I don't think that some of these people that are leaking stuff, you know, went into the White House thinking that they would do that. I think that they got into the White House or they were in the White House and they are experiencing and witnessing things that are so out of order and so crazy that they're sort of being patriots and saying, look,
well, those are the intelligence people, certainly.
Even some of the White House leakers on some of just the sort of benign day-to-day shit. They don't know how to use the lights. And he has TVs installed in every room because he can't get enough of fucking cable news media and just shit like that. That's just like a, you guys need to understand who you're dealing with.
Uh-huh.
And then some of the leak stuff is absolutely people that are like, this is an unprecedented time in our country. And the news media needs to pick up on this because, this could be a threat to the Republic. So I think there's a couple of tiers of leaking going on. But we don't live in an age of let's meet in a parking garage and one guy tells you the things he wants you to know. We live in an age of anybody can say anything and anybody can leak anything.
Sure, but I'm just talking about the actual, like New York Times, Washington Post, USA Today, whatever, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where is the dogged series of, and maybe that's, it's too early. I mean, we're a month into this administration.
It
feels like we've been working on this for years.
We didn't take Nixon down for a much longer.
No.
I think that I would say to me, like, looking at post his little speech to the Congress or his big speech or his glorious, world leader, grand republic speech, the headlines from the New York Times versus the Washington Post, I thought were sort of profound. The New York Times sucked his dick about how presidential he was and the five great things he said was literally their top headline. And The Washington Post posted a thing about how he was dismantling the EPA. And that to me is the difference between clickbait and journalism. The Washington Post is sort of committed to talking about policy and talking about what he actually said and talking about what he's actually doing. And the New York Times is sort of succumbing to, as they did during the campaign, this kind of journalistic clickbait. Like, we're going to write a serious story, but we're not going to do it in a way that ruffles any feathers or that would be boring.
You can thank their editor, Dean Beckert, for that.
I don't thank him or her at all. But, you know, the New York Times is an institution that I believe in, that I don't consider something like Fox News or MSNBC.
Well, of course not.
I consider the New York Times on par with the Washington Post and NPR and the BBC and places like that. But I think that they have really, in the last couple of years, just completely had a failure of journalism and a failure of leadership.
I'm pretty frustrated with NPR.
NPR
is, well, I think they've kind of gone out of their way to normalize this president.
Yeah, that's, but I mean.
And that's their style. I get it.
It is. I don't go to NPR for analysis of anything ever. Mara Liasson covers the Supreme Court in an extraordinary way that no other human being and no other journalist can possibly cover the Supreme Court. I don't care who you are, including fucking Jeffrey Toobin. Like, Mara Liasson covers the Supreme Court in a way that is profound. So if you're going to listen to NPR for anything, listen for that. For their analysis, shut it down. For straight journalism, like, this is what happened in Iraq, Syria, Jordan, Georgia, LA. Listen for that. If you're going to listen for analysis, don't bother, because they will absolutely normalize a Nazi with a Democrat to have both sides. Yes. And that is their great flaw. Yep. However, their news coverage, just straight facts, is straight facts. And as long as you don't listen to the analysis after, their facts are facts. And I believe that those
That's a really good explanation.
Yeah. And the Washington Post has done some of the, and will always, I think, do the best investigative journalism. It reminds me of when we watched Spotlight, the Boston Globe. You know, that wasn't the Boston Globe generally that did that great journalism. It was their specialized section,
section called
Spotlight that
did investigative journalism.
That was their investigative journalism arm of that newspaper, and they uncovered the greatest scandal in modern history.
Well, that's what we need, because obviously we can't count on Congress to do anything.
No. And that's the whole reason that the media has always been the fourth tier of the American government.
Even W came out and said that, was it this week?
Yeah. I mean, the media is the one thing that checks and balances every other check and balance. The media is the thing that keeps everyone honest.
Mm-hmm.
And if the media is failing, then the government fails.
Yeah. Our whole system fails, basically.
Everything fails.
Is the story.
Yeah.
But here's the thing, right? I think a lot of... when you're out there on Twitter or Facebook, or you just hear and you get the sense from our liberal friends, is that they think that this is where everything sort of unravels and the whole Trump presidency goes up in flames. And that's really jumping the gun here.
Yeah.
What we have are some tenders.
What we have are some very serious, tenders, some very serious goalposts, like some very serious things that we need to remember, take note of, and keep a list of, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I have a list. I have a couple. I'm a list person.
Right.
So I have a list of who I have to call every day. Jeff, Chad. And then I have a list of the stuff I need to talk about. And I try to, like, vary it because I can't. I don't really have time to call.
You know,
like,
Corey Gardner needs
a
Jeff, Chad. Nobody can seem to get through to him.
No, that's true. Can I have an update on this?
Yeah.
All right. Jeff, Chad's gone. He's gone. Like, he's been gone for about 3 weeks now. I get nothing. I get ring, 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 ring. Sometimes it just rings for like 2 minutes. Sometimes it goes to a voicemail box that's full. I get nothing. I get no Jeff Chad. I call Jeff Chad. I call Senator Cory Gardner from the state of Colorado, Republican. Every day, and I'm getting a lot of not responses, lot of full voicemail, no voicemail attached, or no voicemail set up, or just I'll just ring for 2 minutes. So I haven't talked to Jeff Chad in a good like 3-4 weeks. I miss him badly. If that's happening to you, I would encourage you to reach out to your local newspaper or, so we've got a couple local newspapers, in our state because Cory Gardner, our U.S. Senator, made national news from just ditching and dodging and sort of skipping out on his constituents so boldly that we had a town hall meeting for Cory Gardner without Cory Gardner, in which a cardboard standee stood in for him, and people wrote their questions and handed them to moderators, and those were all delivered to Cory Gardner. And they had a robust discussion at the time without him. But it made national news that he didn't show the fuck up. So, yeah, like, I forget where I was going there, but you know, call these people. And if you get no one, or if you get Jeff Chat or whatever, I would encourage you to contact your local news stations and say, hey, I've been trying to get a hold of this person for this issue. Here's how many times I've called. Here's when I've called. Here's what happened. Because the local news is starting to keep tally of this stuff, and the national news is starting to pick up on the ones that are, like, particularly bad. And case in point, our senator got picked up by the national news on the New York Times and a couple of other, like the AP and a couple other places. So if you're having a hard time getting a hold of your guy, that's not you. That's, he doesn't want to talk to you. If you don't know who your local news people are to contact, let me know. Just email us at irreverenttestimony@gmail.com or, on Twitter @irreverentduo. And I will find the proper news outlet to let you know to contact. But let's start letting our local news people know, like, here's how many people have called. If you can make any kind of network of people who are making those calls, and sort of, if you can make like an Excel spreadsheet or something of when they called, who they called, what time, and what their response was, that would be really helpful for the local news. If you've got somebody who's like just an Excel wizard, or has extra time, or, you know, is, has time when their kid's asleep because they're a full-time worker, but just a parent, as their full-time work, or whatever it is that you have, just let me know. And let's start contacting local news stations and letting them know how many people are avoiding their constituents, because I think it's a lot. Looking at Twitter and looking at how many people are mad, I'd like to see how many of us we can get. So if you need help, let me know. If not, contact your local and find the right jurisdiction, right? So if you're going to contact like your local newspaper, make sure it's not like the statewide newspaper. Make sure it's like within your local jurisdiction and also the statewide one. And then also email us, and we'll try to get a list together that we can send out for Colorado to some of the national news outlets. And let us know too. Like, are you talking to Jeff Chat? Are you getting a voicemail? Are you getting a busy signal? Are you getting, what are you getting when you call? And also, you better be calling. If you can hear my voice, please be calling. It's important.
Well, that's another thing that, you know, the Republicans certainly aren't going to take the lead on vigorously investigating the Trump-Russia ties. But we put enough pressure on them. People put enough pressure on them. Then they will, might be apt to stonewall them less. Maybe.
Maybe.
Possibly. And.
I mean, you don't seem convinced.
Convinced about what?
That anyone's going to do anything about Russia.
Well, no, I'm not. I'm really not. Right now, we have all these little disparate pieces and these little interesting nuggets, right? And these very troubling sort of hints. And until they connect and get to a deeper picture, right now it's a bunch of disparate puzzle pieces in a jigsaw, right?
It's that for you and I. Whose job is it to put those puzzle pieces together?
A really good investigative journalism team.
Great. That's what we're asking for, right?
Right. And well, that's kind of my point, too, is I don't... There needs to be a series, right?
Yeah.
There needs to be, and I think...
But are you talking old school journalism versus how it works now?
Well, we can't go back to how it used to be. However, I think you bring up Mark Penn, Deep Throat. There is going to have to be another Deep Throat. And whether he is in a smoky garage or via email or fax or envelopes or whatever have you, it is going to have to be a mole on the inside. And I think this is actually a danger for Trump, because there's been a lot of people with their hand in the pot. Right. Mm-hmm. There's Roger Stone and his associates. There's Lewandowski, and Lewandowski was spouting off some stuff today that was potentially damaging. There is Carter Page, who for some reason went on Chris Hayes last night in a really painful, bizarre,
horrifically boring
bunch of non-denial denials about everything, and just looked like, obviously, he looked like a guy that was trying to show that he was hiding something nefarious.
Yes. He literally said at one point, I I'm the number one enemy. And I audibly guffawed and was like, no, you're not the fucking attorney general, dude. Well, I don't know what world you're living in that you think you're the number one enemy because maybe you had a conversation with someone in fucking Cleveland. You aren't doing anything. You don't have a post.
We answered
our
question,
right?
You're
certainly not the fucking attorney general of the United States.
That's why he went on Chris Hayes, to get his face back in the media, maybe. I don't know.
Maybe I went to Cleveland. Maybe. Why don't you guys investigate this robustly? I'm going to make some very vague comments on Chris Hayes, and I'm going to make you investigate it so that you don't look at Jeff fucking Sessions or any number of other Trump officials. I will just be the sacrificial lamb and the distraction, and I will say that I'm, enemy number one. And he said it, and I was like, literally, like, guffawed out loud, like, lol.
That's a game plan.
You're not the fucking attorney general.
The game
Nobody
plan
gives
is,
a shit about you. You don't even work in government at this point.
No.
He
was an advisor to an advisor on the campaign.
On the campaign. He doesn't even work in the administration. It was a complete fucking, here, pay attention to this shiny guy who's making these really, absurd comments that make no sense. Let's investigate that. No, fuck that guy. I don't give a shit about him. You know what I give a shit about? The Attorney General of the United States. That's who I give a shit about.
Well,
let's find out more about that.
You think? Well, then you think it was setting up Carter Page to be a patsy? If this,
I think it's a red herring. I think it's just look at me, and I'll take the blame for some shit that I had nothing to do with. But don't look at the other guy over here.
Well, but he was still a part of the Trump campaign, and that's sort of the big picture. Is the look. The mother load of this is, did the Trump campaign conspire with Russian intelligence to influence the election to help elect Donald Trump? If that can be proven, that's...
And Carter Page would not be on MSNBC.
Well, what if he's gone rogue like Sarah Palin?
Ha ha. She never did. But, here's the thing. That may very well be true, that the Trump campaign colluded with Russia to influence the campaign.
There's no doubt in my mind, but it has to be proven.
But the person who's going to prove that is certainly not Carter Page.
Carter Page
is a red herring, and he's a person who says, well, I had a meeting in Cleveland. I'm not going to say I didn't have a meeting in Cleveland, but I did have a meeting. But I'm not going to say I didn't, and I'm not going to say what I said, but I said some stuff. I'm not going to say what I said. And I may have said some important stuff.
But it's not,
I'm not going to say if I said important stuff. And it's all a red herring to be like, oh my God, let's investigate this guy. Wow,
no,
he matters fucking zero.
But it's not about him.
Listen to me. He matters fucking zero.
Of course.
He's there to make a big show and a big splash and let's do an investigation because this guy said this thing and da 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 da. This guy matters none. He was never important. He didn't say anything important because he doesn't fucking matter. He is throwing himself on the fucking thing and just saying, just investigate me right here. I'm over here. Meanwhile, likely the Trump campaign and Trump himself colluded with Russia to influence the elections and also agreed to things about sanctions prior to his inauguration. There's a million things. This guy is just a big, shiny, fucking red dot for us to all chase around.
Well, hold on,
and
Rachel.
I don't think anyone picked up on it. Does anyone give a shit what that guy said after that interview?
Well,
can you respond to what I said first? Did anyone pick up on what he said? Did any news organization say we should investigate this guy?
A couple. I saw it pop up here and there. But if you're going to investigate Carter Page, it's not for Carter Page. You went and talked to the Russian ambassador in Cleveland. Who put you up to it? What was the discussion? Who did you relay that message to? An investigation leads way more places than Carter Page, unless Carter Page next week comes up. Well, yes, I came up with
I had a drink with his secretary, and that's it.
No, that's not where I'm going with that. If he's going to be a patsy, he's going to say, of my own accord, I reached out and saw if we could influence the election and work with WikiLeaks. And, you know, it's like that would be being a patsy and cutting this thing off at the head. And I don't think that's where Carter Page was going. And I don't think an investigation necessarily ends with Carter Page when those questions start getting asked.
I don't either.
It's not about him.
What I'm saying is he's trying to make it about him to provide cover in the media.
Maybe.
Because he understands that the intelligence agencies aren't going to do a real investigation. So as long as the media is sniffing after him, no further investigation is going to be done. So as long as he can keep them chasing all day long, doesn't fucking matter. He can be the next guy that the media chases their tail around and they're like, wasn't there something about Jeff's? No, this Carter guy's interesting. And what about this other guy? And it's just going to be some fucking guy every week that they're like, oh, this guy said some fucking weird shit. Let's investigate him. Mm. Oh, there's nothing there. And then we never go back to the fucking, like, you know, did Trump do some shit way, way back then?
Well, David Frum made that point tonight. Don't take your eye off the ball and get too caught up even in Sessions or any of these other characters, because it's all about what Trump decided to do. But see, when there's a conspiracy, it's a web. And, you know,
have to untangle the web. We have to not get caught in the spider's web at the same time.
Well, sure. But, you know, now I'll go back to the Woodward and Bernstein thing. There were so many different players and so many different hands, and all those leads had to be run down. All of them. Every single one. There were lots of Carter Page type figures who just said vague things and gave non-denial denials, and, you know, they sort of knew this or they sort of knew that. And you do have to run all those leads down.
That's fine. Run them down, but don't let's... All right. What I'm saying is, maybe we're speaking two different languages. This guy's not important. This guy doesn't matter. He doesn't know anything, and he doesn't matter. Run down everything you need to run down. What I don't want is an entire news cycle about this unimportant man who knows nothing. What I want is a continued coverage of the fuck is going on with Trump and Russia. And getting caught up in this little man who said some shit on Chris Hayes, and the fact that he went there and he made these very obvious statements that were like intentionally dodgy and intentionally sketchy tells me they want us running after him because there's nothing there. What I want the media to do is their goddamn job and say, lol, you little troll, never mind about you. Like, let's go send our junior reporters or our junior whatever's off to do that. But let's not lose the goal here. The goal is not fucking Carter Page. The goal is what the fuck happened and what is happening with Trump and Russia.
Yeah,
right?
Well, I mean, maybe. I'm not 100% convinced that Carter Page is a dead end who doesn't know anything. He has very deep ties to Russia. He is deep ties to Russia.
Yes. Did he meet them one time?
No. He has very deep ties, business dealings, intelligence dealings. He goes back a long, long way with the Russians. I think he's an interesting character to investigate. So I would disagree with you to a point there. But then everybody in Trump circle that campaign did, like Paul Manafort, Roger Stone, I mean, all
do
these.
Do you hear what I'm saying, though?
Yeah, I do see what you're saying. But I think,
like, how many surrogates can he throw under the fire so that we just never get to the fucking point?
Well, see, I disagree with that. I think more and more of these surrogates with these ties, you start to run down more information and make more connections, and the picture possibly becomes clear. And if Carter Page is a piece of the puzzle, then you plug that one in and you go to the next one.
And what if he
isn't? Well,
you know what I mean? What if he's just, like, not?
But he clearly is.
Okay, the next guy. Just as like, yes, I met with two leaders of Russia in the same way that, like, Trump was trying to tie, like, Nancy Pelosi to Russia today. Do you know what I mean? Like, Trump...
What Trump did was idiotic.
Right. So, what I'm... I think it's very suspicious that if a guy like Carter Page really had ties to Russia the way that you think that he does, or the way that he may, it would be very odd and a little suspicious for him to do the interview that he did on MSNBC.
Well, that was my point. I don't understand why he was on there. I don't understand the utility of it.
Because it's a red herring, because he has nothing to do with the things that are actually being investigated. He may have ties to Russia, but those ties probably don't have anything to do with Donald Trump.
I disagree completely. At the Russia,
well,
at the,
I don't. You at, can't disagree with my opinion. I'm saying I have no idea if what his conversations were had to do with that. What I'm saying is I think that perhaps he is being left as the sacrificial lamb because he has a lot of ties to Russia. But when you run down all of those ties, none of them will come back to Trump. So he gets to be the sacrificial lamb. And so Trump gets to say, see, you, he told you, I had nothing to do with anything. You ran down and you wasted 7 investigative journalists on this guy, and it had nothing to do with me because we are obsessed with this guy who went on fucking Chris Hayes instead of using those resources to go after the Trump administration's ties to Russia.
Well, we're talking about the Trump campaign, and he was an advisor for the Trump campaign.
The campaign, the fucking, you know what I'm, do you understand what I'm saying? Like, this guy's a sacrificial lamb. He's coming out and saying all this shit because he wants to be a fucking target for the lightning bolt, right? He's the, what do you call it? The lightning rod. There's a reason for that. There's a reason they offer this guy up.
I don't think that really worked. We talked about it for a minute, but all the news all day was about Sessions. And
okay, it may not have worked, but that was the purpose.
I don't know if that was the purpose. And I'm going to have to argue with you a little more or go a step further. He met at the Republican National Convention in Cleveland as a member, as an advisor to the Trump campaign, met with the Russians ostensibly to get help with either hacking the election or to talk prematurely about easing Russian sanctions. That's a story. That's not nothing.
Then why the fuck was he on Chris Hayes?
He's an idiot because he's a fame monger.
Come on.
I don't know. It didn't make any sense to me, but he's not that important. We're kind of running out of time here. I think the main point is, though, that I think some intrepid investigative journalists do have to keep their eye on the ball and keep their focus and not get sidetracked, like you say. And it's just going to take a lot of digging, and I think it's going to take a series of investigations, and it's going to take some very, very dogged, relentless, pounding the pavement, tough investigative journalism. And I think there's a taste for that now.
Yeah.
I hope so.
Like I said, yeah, exactly right. Exactly that.
And Washington Post is increasing staff. I know the New York Times is increasing staff. So, you know, there's some positive things.
Besides pimping ourselves, can I just say, I know that you get a lot of this journalism for free online, but I would encourage you to pay for it if you can, because it matters and it does cost a lot of money. And I just made a plea to a thing to do a thing that makes that. So I get the Washington Post now because I need it. And, in my request, I wrote Democracy Dies in the Dark, and my request was immediately granted. And I would just urge you guys to think about that, like, the Washington Post is free up to, I don't know, 10 articles a month or something like that. And that's all well and fine, and we all like free stuff, us millennials at least. But
us poor, broke millennials.
But if you can afford to pay the Washington Post, or I think the Washington Post is the best, but New York Times or whatever news outlet you most prefer, I would encourage you to go ahead and subscribe already. It's important, especially in this day and age, because democracy dies in the dark.
So on that note, thank you, Rachel, for carrying this show, as I was pretty damn useless. So recovering from the flu and completely out of energy.
Very, very tired.
Stay active, stay tuned, stay involved. We will be back next week. Find us online at Irreverent Duo on Twitter, Irreverent
testimony@gmail.com via email. And we have a Patreon page up. Go to patreon.com/irreverenttestimony. We do have a Patreon. We have one.
Yes.
So that's better than zero. So check that out. And
all right, my lovely. Stay safe. Stay tuned. Stay active, sandwich.
Adios. Bye.